I've been looking forward to this next one since it was floated to me a couple weeks ago that we were going to be having him on, because he covers what I certainly think a lot of us would regard as that very entertaining nexus of sports and TV and business and where all these things come together. Some of the juiciest off-field stories in the world of professional sports. It was kind of fitting, actually, to be able to get him in tonight. For anybody that looked at our rundown earlier today, we didn't have him on it. It was posted at the FDHLounge.com. Evan Roberts, our good friend from WFAN, he had to cancel. We got this next gentleman in there. We had to replace him last week because he had something that came up. So I'm very glad and very grateful that he was able to come on with us here this next week and get him on. I can only be speaking of USA Today sports television columnist Michael McCarthy. Michael, it's a real pleasure to have you on the FDH Lounge. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for inviting me, and I'm very glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. I got to ask you first and foremost, and this is one of the things that comes up, you know, as I'm doing some research here and Googling and everything like that. It reminds you very quickly the commonality of your name with new Super Bowl winning head coach Mike McCarthy. I'm just wondering if have you gotten any wrong numbers from anybody? Any drunken late night calls? Coach, now I can die happy. Thanks. We won without Favre. I mean, has that happened at all?
You know, it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, it's funny how many Mike McCarthys I've met throughout my life. It's kind of the John Smith of Irish names. So I did interview the governor of Wisconsin once for a story not too long after Mike McCarthy got his job there, and he said, "Are you sure I'm not talking to the new Packers coach?" I said, "No, coach." But, yeah, it's funny. It's what can I say? It's a great name.
Hasn't happened to you yet. I hope I didn't put the kibosh on you there, Michael.
That's right.
Well, you're covering a lot of very interesting stories, and the one that was actually just posted, I believe, today, I'm looking here at USAtoday.com, Twins Mauer to join Steelers Polamalu in Maine event, nice headline there, M-A-N-E, Maine, as apparently there's going to be some kind of hair challenge through Head and Shoulders, so talk about that column.
Who's a lifelong Minnesota native, proves that an athlete doesn't have to be in New York or Los Angeles anymore to get endorsement deals. You know, he's got a new, very lucrative deal with Procter & Gamble's Head & Shoulders, where he's going to be appearing in those ads with Troy Polamalu of the Steelers, and he's going to be appearing on a Facebook page, and they're basically going to make him their spokesperson. He's also got Nike, he's got Gatorade, he's got all these deals, and he's playing in Minnesota. LeBron James is the same thing. When he was in Cleveland, now he's Miami. He still gets all these deals. So I think the old adage, especially in the sports business, that you have to be in New York or L.A. to really build an endorsement career just doesn't work anymore.
Well, Michael, let's break that down by sport for a second, and I have to note in passing, here in the flagship city of the Sports Talk Network, Cleveland, Ohio, LeBron James, of course, remains an open wound. I have to say that, but clearly he proved, and I was always dubious when it was said, oh, there's so much more money to be made in the other cities. Well, maybe there is on endorsements and stuff, but he proved you could do an awful lot pretty much from anywhere. It's now a global economy, global platforms, you can be seen, et cetera. But that's the NBA. The NFL, I'm looking in your same article here, and it mentions about Clay Matthews. Baseball, to me, I mean, this is just me looking at it on the surface. To me, it seems like kind of a novelty to have a guy like Joe Mauer and a smaller market being able to do this. Am I correct in saying that it seems a little more possible anyways in the NFL and the NBA for somebody to transcend their market size and get these type of deals?
You know, that's a very good point. You know, baseball has been used for years to the Yankee stars and the Dodger stars getting the endorsements, you know, Derek Jeter's and the Alex Rodriguez of the world. But I think MLB has got this new generation of stars who are playing all over the country who are coming up in the endorsement ranks. I mean, the way the endorsement field usually works, the NBA players are at the top because they could stand out so well as individuals. Mm-hmm. And NFL players, with the exception of Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and a few others, tend to struggle because they're in helmets and in pads. And the baseball players are fitting in the middle. So I wouldn't be surprised this year to see more baseball players like Joe Mauer picking up deals because there's so much young talent around the league.
See, that's very interesting, too, because my mind immediately starts kind of flipping through the Rolodex as you're mentioning like that. I mean, somebody who clearly has the flashiness to be able to pull off something like that, although, you know, his image certainly took some hits last year. Hanley Ramirez, so, I mean, that's kind of like, yeah, I could see that in the one sense, but maybe not in the other sense. Somebody like Troy Tulowitzki, who probably has, like, the total package because he's got the kind of intensity that would keep him from ever doing anything that would be as destructive as what Hanley Ramirez did last year. You're kind of right. You start flipping down the list here. Some guys might be a little bit disqualifying for one reason or another, but yeah, you could probably come up with about a good 6 to 8 in baseball that would be good candidates for that regardless of what market they're in.
And here's another good thing going for these players. They're cheaper.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that's happened is the top guys in the endorsement field and the top female athletes as well have been on top so long that they're starting to price themselves out of business. In the last couple of years, sports endorsements have really fallen off for a couple of reasons. One is the recession. Companies aren't spending this kind of discretionary income anymore on athletes. But two has been the major embarrassment and shame that so many sponsors have undergone as a result of their athletes' misbehavior, Tiger Woods on down the line. So I think if you're younger and cheaper and, you know, you seem to be a pretty straight guy or gal, you know, who keeps their nose clean and works hard like a Joe Mauer and has got a good reputation, your chances for endorsements have skyrocketed in this environment.
You raise an interesting point. I want to follow up on it a little bit. In terms of Tiger Woods, obviously that's a guy, and you can count him on one hand, guys in sports who companies won't break away from completely after disgraceful conduct like his. But when it comes to the 99.9% of the other ones that are out there to where there can be disqualifying conduct for some of these type of deals, Are you hearing anything about increased due diligence on the part of some of these the corporate sponsors here, a little bit of a sense of maybe looking into whether or not this guy might have some issues that might come out, or, oh, this guy, you know, yeah, the word is he's a little difficult in the clubhouse. There may be some things that come out unpleasant about him at some point. Do you get any sense that sponsors are doing that yet, or have they just decided it's not really worth it and you can't really guess who's going to go wrong and who's not?
Yeah, very much so. From what I hear, sponsors are doing much more due diligence on who they're willing to hire, which is why you're seeing less endorsement deals. And they're writing clauses into their contracts that will protect them. If I'm going to pay you X millions amount of money a year to represent my brand, then you better behave in a way that doesn't bring shame on my brand and humiliation. The last thing a sponsor wants is somebody from the press like you and me calling them up saying, do you have any comment on so-and-so who represents your brand in public being arrested for XYZ? They hate that. They run screaming into the night when, you know, one of their endorsers gets into trouble. So they're doing a lot more due diligence, and they're writing a lot more clauses into contracts and using smart lawyers to protect themselves in case something like this happens.
Well, that seems smart under the circumstances. Yeah, you do not want to have it blow up on you and reflect negatively, and that's to be avoided at all costs. As far as it goes with baseball, I know we've spent a little bit of time talking about this already, but it's about to be baseball season coming up here. I'd like to get a sense from you. This is more of a medium to long-term question. I had heard several years ago that one of the things that Bud Selig had put in place that he thought was going to be a leveler over the long period of time here was to take all of the new media money, internet and other type stuff, mobile streaming and everything like that, put it under the one banner there, and that they were looking at it in terms of, okay, the Yankees are always going to have their local TV money and everything else, but eventually over a period of time, this will grow to be equivalent to what the NFL did, putting all their TV money under one umbrella. As the internet gets to be bigger, as it gets to be more dominant, then the Yankees won't have nearly the advantage and the other big market teams nearly the advantage. Obviously, we're still a long ways away from that. How long do you think it could take until these other medium to long-term measures Major League Baseball has taken until it'll have that kind of leveling effect?
That's far away. One of the smartest things I think Major League Baseball has done is they are one of the best at new media and they're one of the best at TV. You know, take the MLB Network. Well, that has been one of the most successful sports cable launches in recent years. It's critically acclaimed. They got great talent, and they got the distribution for it. Meanwhile, the NFL is still banging its head against the wall with the NFL Network. They can't get that thing over 40 or 50 million. So I think MLB does a great job with that. I think on the internet, MLB does a great job, where if you read, the reporting by MLB.com and teams, it's pretty critical. Yeah, this is not a bunch of house shills out there. I mean, they do a very good job of writing and reporting it as a sport, both in the good and bad. On the other hand, the problem with baseball is the haves and have-nots. I mean, you got the Yankees and you got the big market teams and you got the small market teams who just can't seem to compete. You don't have a situation as in the NFL where you have the Green Bay Packers, who from the smallest city to host a team in the NFL winning a championship. It just doesn't happen. And the more you look at what's going on with the NBA, the more you see it veering, I think, towards the MLB model. We're going to have six or seven powerhouse teams with two or three superstars apiece, and the rest of the league is going to be filler.
Yeah, it does seem to be moving in that direction, and the Melo trade is just the latest indicator of that. It's very interesting, too, when you're talking about the MLB's launch being in many ways more successful than the NFL Network launch. NFL Network having the ultimate thing going for it, in addition to some regular season games. NFL freaking films. I mean, something that people can't get enough of that and haven't been able to since I was a kid. That's an 800-pound gorilla right there, and they're still having trouble getting distribution on it. It really is kind of amazing, Michael.
I think it was a combination of factors. I think in the beginning, the NFL Network decided, that aside from this basic packages of games on Thursdays and Saturday nights, they were going to allow the local team to air the game in the home market. So in other words, there was a situation a few years ago where the Green Bay Packers were playing the Dallas Cowboys. And unless you had NFL Network, you couldn't watch the game. So people in Texas and in Wisconsin went crazy. And the powers that be caved in, and they showed the game on broadcast network. Well, if that happens, you lose all your leverage. It's great for the fan, and I'm on the side of the fans. But if you're on the side of the network and you want leverage to get people to subscribe to your product, it's the worst thing in the world.
No, that's absolutely
the product
true.
Anyway.
No, you're right about that, Michael. There's no question about that. They folded when it came right down to it, because they let the local stations buy the rights to it, as they've done for the ESPN games over the years, and they treated the NFL Network property like just another cable network property instead of keeping their advantage on it. You alluded to something, the subject before my last question here. I'd like to round back to that as far as the NBA and the consolidation here with the teams. Again, there are three sports right now that are looking at labor apocalypse in the next year to year and a half. The NBA maybe being the most likely of the three, although the NFL is looming right now. Certainly the owners want to roll back all of this mega power that the players have gained here. The owners are out to openly break the players here to a great extent. You've got the NFL, where there's now the mediation going on, which at the very least probably puts pressure on the NFL, because how do you call for a lockout if the deadline comes but you're still having quote unquote good talks? And then you've also got the NHL, where I don't know all the issues involved in that, but I do know when the players are hiring Donald Fear, that's pretty much the I'll see you in hell card right there. So you,
right.
You got three of them in the next 2 years. I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah, you've got three of them in the next 2 years, and the bottom line that I think the billionaires on one side and the millionaire players on the other don't understand is the fans don't care. They don't care. They want to see the games. So, they can spin and kind of take these stories in whatever directions you want. They're going to be blamed by both sides. If there's no NFL season in 2011, the fans are going to blame both the owners and the players. It's the most popular sport in America. It keeps rising in popularity every year. I mean, the TV ratings for the NFL were through the roof this year. Yeah, the Super Bowl was the most watched telecast of all time. It's just an unstoppable force in sports. And if they take that away from the fans at its peak of popularity, there's going to be a lot of trouble.
Oh, clearly. And, you know, and this is a very unpopular opinion among my friends, but it's one of these things. My opinion on this, as far as the NFL one goes, in particular, Michael, again, when I was a kid, the 82, and then subsequently when I was a little older, the 87 things here, I'm somebody where, God help me, I'm rooting for the story. I'm really fascinated by the beat that you cover. I want the chaos. I want to see what it looks like. I'll get my football back eventually, but I want to see the three ring circus. I want to see it play out. I don't hardly speak for anybody in this regard, but I'm saying bring on the chaos. I want to grab my bag of popcorn and watch it happen.
Well, you know, in my business, which you accurately said is sort of the nexus between sports and business, there is no off season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With all this labor problem, you know, the Super Bowl ends, and, you know, there's no downtime whatsoever. Now you just go on to the next thing. A couple of years ago with the NBA, you had the gambling scandal, the Tim Donaghy scandal. You know, that came out of nowhere. You know, before that with Major League Baseball, you had the Mitchell Report. I was there in that hotel ballroom in New York when they handed out this 500-page textbook, and, you know, we all started leaping through it like crazy, you know, trying to find the names. So there's no off season when it comes to sports business. Sports business and sports are just intertwined at this point. And, you know, and it's easy to say, well, sports isn't in a business. It is. You know, and it is, and, you know, maybe it always has been going back to the Olympics in ancient Greece. But, you know, the NFL and the NBA, these are corporations. These are entities. These are companies that are running a business, multi-billion dollar businesses, Fortune 500 businesses. And they have the same problems as everybody else, which is labor problems and talent and scandals and lawsuits. You know, they have the same problems that every big business does.
Well, it's one of these things, Michael. I know this is going to make you laugh when I tell you this, but, you know, I've been going a good chunk of my life to Ohio State games. I didn't go there. My dad did. He's a season ticket holder, so every year I catch at least one or two games with him. And my dad is somebody who doesn't care a lot about sports outside of Ohio State football. College football, I don't know how you can watch the pros with all that big money pollution. He gives me all that stuff. And then it's funny, like, he'll go, like, if they're in the national championship game a couple of years ago, like, he went there, tried to get a ticket. I can't believe they got tickets going for this amount of money. It's just funny to see him get slapped in the face of the whole thing of, you know, you're trying to make these artificial distinctions between the amount of money in college and the amount of money in pros. I don't know when exactly it happened, but it was probably at least 2-3 decades ago. They got to be neck and neck, I think, as far as it goes with big money and big money pollution. I mean, the days when you could talk about the purity of the college game, you know, you look at everything going on from the BCS on down, Michael, and in many ways the issues appear to be almost indistinguishable in some ways.
I agree with you completely. I would refer to your father, who sounds like a fine man, to our college coaching surveys. I mean, every year we go down, we hunt down the actual contracts of college football coaches at public schools, and we print them for our readers. Mm-hmm. And you would be astounded the money flowing through college sports. You know, you have head football coaches making $4, $5, $6 million a year as part of their contracts. They get country clubs and cars and jet flights and this, that, and the other thing. So, yes, the college sports world is awash in money. None of it is going to the actual players who play the games. You know, it's all going to the coaches and everything. And, in fact, you know, college football coaches are oftentimes the highest paid state employee in general. They make far more money than the presidents or the provosts of the universities, and sometimes more than many of the people in the state government as well.
Oh, yeah, exactly, because it gives opportunities for that to get thrown in their face. I remember a couple of years ago, Jim Calhoun got accosted by some grandstanding pinko at a press conference there. How do you feel about taking money out of the mouths of women and orphans and, you know, everything? So once in a blue moon, they do get put on the defensive about it, Michael. It doesn't happen too much, though.
Put on defensive about it, and, you know, I've interviewed college coaches about it, and I've interviewed their agents about it, and they always give the same thing, you know, the same answer. It's free market.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting paid what the free market says we should get paid. You know, if the free market says, you know, we were getting paid $200,000 or $100,000, then that's what we'd be getting paid. But, you know, why should I be Mother Teresa here, where my colleagues, you know, are making $5 or $6 million. Oh. So that's how they justify it, and you know, and the schools justify these high salaries in a number of ways. First of all, college football is a driver of a lot of sports. I mean, the other people on campus might not like college football, but let's face facts. College football is footing the bill for a lot of these other sports that aren't making money. You know, so a school might have 20, 25 school sports programs that aren't making money through ticket sales and everything else, and college football is basically paying their way. So in a way, some of these sports on campuses should be very grateful to college football, because if they didn't have a strong college football program, there wouldn't be any money for them at all.
Well, nothing illustrates your point better than what happened with this whole, and I think this dance obviously is not done yet, as far as conference realignment, college football, the continued migration to mega conferences. But yeah, a team in a conference in the Big 12 like Kansas, an almost unmatched basketball program, and yet, in looking at it, they were like the proverbial baby getting left in the dumpster here, because their football program doesn't draw flies. If that doesn't show you the difference between the amount of cash that college football brings in and college hoops does, nothing illustrated it, I think, more starkly than that.
Right. I mean, you know, you have a lot of people I talk to these days who tell you college sports right now, and when they say that, they generally mean college football and college hoops, is the second most popular sport in the country right now. And you know what? That's hard to argue with. You know, of course, baseball is long accepted as number two, but, you know, college keeps growing. You know, the people are passionate. You know, the people have money. You know, all these college graduates, they have money to spend. They travel around. They support their teams. So, yeah, it's getting a lot more attention and a lot more money flowing to these conferences from TV. I mean, you know, speak about a potential disaster. I mean, if there's an NFL lockout, it would be a disaster for the TV networks. You know, here is TV networks that are paying literally billions of dollars for the NFL and making hundreds of millions of dollars, even billions of dollars from advertising, selling advertising time during NFL games, and that will all go up in smoke.
No, I will.
So I don't know what in the world they would do to replace those ad dollars. I don't know what in the world they would do to fill all those hours of programming.
Yeah, I mean, that's. Do you have any idea? I mean, what might be the case? I would think. I mean, yeah, this is the least the NFL can do. Maybe crack open the NFL Films Vault, try and trot out some classic stuff here. I mean, that's the very least the NFL owes them on a moral level. And I hope nobody's going to giggle when I say on a moral level here and try and bring that into it. But what do you think some of the fallback contingencies are? And could you possibly see? In my conspiracy mind here, I'm looking at this thinking, you know what? If I'm ESPN, I look at maybe some of these, especially smaller conferences here that are a little more malleable, like, hey, listen here, fella, what do you think about moving a game to Sunday afternoon the first Sunday in October here? You know, do you think we could see any of that kind of stuff?
I think it's all on the table. You know, and I've been talking to networks about this, and they have made no decisions yet. They're looking at everything and anything. You know, first of all, of course, if there's an NFL lockout, I think, you know, they're gonna trot out as much college football as they possibly can. You know, it'll be college football all day, every day, all the time. I mean, you're already seeing that with games on Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays and Saturdays. I think you'll see some of that. I also think, you know, you'll see them take sort of a small ball strategy. A few years ago when NBC got out of the NFL business, you know, they decided to, you know, concentrate on Olympic sports and smaller, less known sports, action sports. So I could see them doing that a little bit, trying to give more attention to sports, you know, that haven't gotten as much attention in the fall before, you know, the NHL and sports like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as an NHL fan, I would certainly like to see anything that gives them a better platform. Something I'd just like to ask you about as well here, as we're bringing this around here and plugging the various things you're involved with here, Michael, of course, your column with USA Today and also at usatoday.com on your Twitter feed as well. Something I noticed on your Twitter page here was that you had done an appearance in the last couple of days, something that I enjoy listening to online. I haven't been able to pick it up on terrestrial anywhere, but Travis Rogers of the Sporting News Radio Network, and all I can say about your appearance on there, I'm sure it was a great appearance. Fact.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate appreciate the opportunity to come on. I'm also one of the writers of our Game On blog at usatoday.com. So if your readers want, your listeners want to give that a shot, check it out and read it. And if they like it, bookmark it. I'll thank them in advance, and please keep reading.
Well, Michael, we love to have conversations about these kind of topics here. These are things that are of great interest to a lot of our viewers. And again, I knew it would be a wonderful conversation with you. Thank you so much. It would be our pleasure to do it again.
All right. Take care. My
Appreciate
pleasure,
it. Thanks. Michael McCarthy from USA Today, everyone.